Ladies and gentlemen, you are about to witness some scenes from the next attraction to play this theater. This picture, truly one of the most unusual ever filmed, contains scenes which under no circumstances should be viewed by anyone with a heart condition or anyone who is easily upset. We urgently recommend that if you are such a person or the parent of a young or impressionable child now in attendance, that you and the child leave the auditorium for the next 90 seconds.
Well, hello there, my friends. You found another episode of the Video Nasty Project, home of the 72 movies that are so disgusting and depraved that their very existence alone would undermine the moral fabric of our society altogether. Hey! Tonight's movie, we continue our educational series where we tell you don't go in the park alone, don't look in the house, don't go near the park, and don't look in the basement. Yeah, let's don't look at the trailer, shall we?
The line between sanity and madness can be crossed in a single step. And with this step, you enter the nightmare world of terror. Judge Kamen, whose iron self-control hides the urge to kill. Harriet, a mother's love, twisted into the malignant shape of evil. The sergeant, living in the hell of an aimless war, fighting a battle within himself that he lost long ago. Allison, in a desperate need for love. An obsession that could drive her to murder. Danny, whose sense of humor triggers a violent act of revenge. Dr. Masters, who has her own idea of the gentle art of healing. And Charlotte, who left the world of sanity and security only to be trapped in the nightmare world of madness, a nightmare she cannot escape. They all met on the day the insane took over the asylum. Don't look in the basement. Rated R.
And that was Don't Look in the Basement. We just got done watching that. You know, this is the bit where we usually tell you, okay, here's the story. Here's what happens. We can't really do that because it's not so much it's not really a story.
There's no plot.
Yeah, it's a bunch of incidents strung together in rapid succession.
So let's give them the premise.
All right.
So you have a nut house out in the middle of nowhere. And it is the world's shittiest sanitarium. They don't have any locks on the doors. They give the inmates axes. They leave knives lying around. They generally don't act like you're the patient and I'm the doctor.
They've established a family dynamic here. The doctor is the father figure. The nurse, the head nurse, is the mother figure. But they've driven her crazy to the point where she wants to leave. So there's just starting to become the downfall of the place. I mean, they don't have locks on the doors because everybody is at the point where they're more like a nuclear family than doctor and patient.
It's a progressive new age. I'm going to treat them by inviting them in as my family, and then I'm going to give you an axe so that you can work out your aggressions on this log here. And so the judge, one of the many colorful characters in the movie, he's got his axe and he's wailing on it, and the doctor is like, yes, reach down deep and unleash your anger, give in to your hate, and bam. And
hit it with the axe, judge, hit it with the axe.
And the judge says, oh, I'm really tired of hacking away this log, and starts hacking away at the doctor.
No more father figure, which means now, woo! Goody, kids can do what we want. It's playtime plus also, oh, daddy's dead.
The nurse, the one that wanted to leave, realizes, oh shit, it's now time to turn to my resignation. She splits, and one of the inmates, the one who cuddles the doll, the one with mother issues, grabs her and shoves her head into her Samsonite and then zips up and kills her by decapitating her with Samsonite.
And then presumably disposes of the body somewhere nearby.
Probably just throwing it in
the basement.
So we work our way through meeting all of our colorful characters. We've got the judge, who we just formerly met. We've got the sergeant, and he is pretty much, he came back from Nam, and his head's all fucked up.
We've got crazy, silly boy, who was taken from his family and put in here because he's a klepto, and he laughs perpetually because he's got some kind of derangement.
Then there's Sam, the child man, a big black man who actually kind of has his shit together mentally, but he's like a overgrown child.
He's the emotional center of the movie.
Yeah.
And he was the one that was lobotomized, so he's kind of a very simple dude. Yeah.
Then we've got the crazy, silent type woman with the really long hair, and you know what they do with women with really long hair in Japanese movies. There's always something sinister.
I think of her as the feral one.
Yeah, she did, in a couple of scenes, did look an awful lot like Sadako.
Yeah, she really did.
That one scene where she's kind of clipped down behind Dr. Master's chair, and she's all got her hair strung out and looking up. It's like, you're going to start crawling out of my computer monitor any second now, aren't you?
Yeah, just don't keep her away from the kitchen knife, please.
And another scene where she's looking around the door. It's just like, oh, the chills just went down my spine. Just the expression on her face.
Then we have the nympho. The one who was spurned by men, and so she's damaged good. So she comes onto everything with a dick.
Then you've got the, how to best describe her, the Nurse Ratched, basically, type.
Yeah, Dr. Masters, Nurse Ratched, basically. Doctor. She kind of inherits the sanitarium from the doctor after the doctor gets 40 whacks. And she tries to run it the best she can. She takes over and implements his new wave progressive policies, but with her firm hand.
This is a house of very well delineated character types, the tropes.
So into this little crazy world comes our hero.
Beals.
Essentially.
Nurse Beals.
Nurse Beals. And she was hired by the doctor to come on and be an extra hand. And then the doctor got his 40 whacks, and Nurse Ratched, she's like, I don't know nothing about you. Please go away. And she's like, but I gave him my old job, and I've finally come here to work with you because I'm so enamored with your ideas. And she's like, okay, you can stay.
Although it did take a bit for her to be convinced. She didn't just do it on the spur of the moment. She spent several minutes objecting to this woman here, trying to push her away, even though this woman had left her previous profession and her previous habitat or whatever.
And that pushing away was where I was starting to think, okay, there's something off with you. You're not quite right. You're in the way you're doing this. And it turns out, I was.
But also there's the obvious thing that the head of this place has just been murdered. And nobody's done anything about it. Where are the cops? Where's the aid car? Where's the body? Why is she taking over and not allowing this woman to come in? She's clearly hiding the murder.
And, big spoilers for a 45-year-old movie, it turns out she's just as insane as everybody else, and she is deliberately obfuscating the problem so that the new doctor doesn't leave and doesn't alert the authorities and doesn't basically bring the cops in. Because everyone who shows up, like the telephone repair guy, he gets whacked. Yep. Everybody who comes into the orbit of the sanitarium gets disposed of.
The insanity is contained within the walls of the house because whenever anybody's outside, with the exception of the judge, and even under that circumstance, they're relatively calm. I mean, the judge committed a murder, yes, but it wasn't the crime of passion or anything like that. He was just doing what the doctor said, which was reach in and now, you know, use your axe, and he buried it, and he didn't, there was no malice in it.
I mean, aside, malice aside from reaching into your anger and releasing it upon the log,
still
a bad idea.
Yes, so this movie is it's a potent character study, obviously, because you've got all these characters and they're really well delineated. I mean, they cast some really good actors for this.
The story is kind of this lackadaisical weaving its way through vignettes of insanity. What sells the movie for me is that the acting is really, really strong.
Yeah.
You get this, everybody is just has dripping of madness, and just they absolutely just chew the scenery like a starving man at a buffet, but it really worked for me.
Every single character in this movie is fairly compelling. The acting is all really, really good. You want to get into the characters' heads and figure them out, but at the same time, because they're cuckoo, you're like,
The only person I didn't like who was doing the acting job, I didn't like our new nurse, our protagonist. I thought she was kind of wooden. She didn't do anything for me. Everybody else, was fucking delicious.
If this movie had a bigger budget, I think it would have, you know, been able to go toe-to-toe with some larger budgeted movies mm-hmm. about madness, like Taxi Driver or Cuckoo's Nest or something like that, if they'd been given the opportunity to have, you know, I think just a little more money. But in terms of the production value, they used what they had really well. They had a big-ass yeah. house with a lot of rooms, mm-hmm. so they were able to explore this place. Every character got to explore their psychosis or their problem in depth. And then there's the threat of this basement, which only really comes into play halfway into the movie. And I couldn't tell who the hell the person in the basement who was still alive was, whether it was the doctor who was only severely injured but not dead, or whether it was the lead nurse who got crunched but was still barely alive.
Eventually, as crazy people do, Nurse Ratched trips herself up and is exposed for being in the asylum also proper. She finds like her note card out. One of the inmates had found it and got it out of the personnel files. And so she goes and, how did you find this? How did you get this? Crumples it up and burns it in. That was Sarge, wasn't it?
It was Sarge. Yeah, it was Sarge's hand.
And so, yeah, makes Sarge hold out the balled up thing and sets it on fire in his hand. I'm like, ooh. You're not a doctor. You're not a doctor.
Yeah, so clearly.
That was a creepy scene and very well done.
So this woman is clearly a control freak. She may have been a doctor, or she may have been deluded into thinking she was a doctor. She made mention of, she did something a long time ago that could have saved thousands of lives, but she made some big mistake.
And yeah, she essentially, that was her breaking point, and now she used to be a doctor, now she is no longer a doctor, and she's hanging out with the inmates running the asylum.
It's really interesting, the ending, the dynamics of it, because you have everybody except Sam going off on Dr. Masters, just beating her or stabbing her or hitting her with things. And Sam comes in and he basically, it's like he's trying to rescue her, but it's too late. So he just smashes his way through everyone else.
He's got a couple of weird character turns because he is under Dr. Masters' thrall and takes our heroine up to the lobotomization room because, you know, Dr. Masters is like, I got to get rid of you now. Tough to be you. So gets drugged up to the lobotomization room and she has Sam strap her down and says, I'm going to take care of you the way that I took care of him. And that's, you don't bring up your past life in front of your yeah. lobotomized victim. Cause
yeah. He's like, wait a minute.
Flashback,
trips out, and then it goes badly for the nurse after that.
At this point, Dr. Beals is thoroughly just insane with fear. I mean, she can't think her way out into a dry paper bag.
Yeah.
At this point, I mean, she is completely pole-axed. Can't figure a way out of the situation, needs to be rescued, which is where Sam comes in.
Yeah, he pulls her out of the building and basically goes, boop, here you go, back in the outside world, be free.
Voulez.
But what's really interesting is the final scene involving him, where he goes into the kitchen, he's covered in yuck,
yeah.
and he goes to the freezer and he gets out a popsicle and he eats it. And then he starts to cry, because he's just then he's realized what has happened. And he slaughtered his family, basically.
So the movie does have its strong points to it, and bits like that, you know, it ends on a very poignant note. So there is a lot to recommend in this movie. So shall we talk about the plot for a little bit?
What little bare-bones plot there is.
Yeah. Now, we've alluded to the fact that it's really more a series of vignettes in and around the insane asylum. And I think, did you like how the movie plays out? I mean, because it does have plot points.
Yeah, I liked it. I liked the way they built upon the sequences. I mean, you don't know what the hell is going on when the bodies disappear. You know, when the repairman disappears, what the hell happened to him? Was he having sex with the nympho? Or did he, because he kept trying to push her away. All the men in this movie are basically anti-sex. The judge is, no, slut, bad, get away, evil. Ben is, of course, big and a kid, so she's not going to go after him. And then you got the telephone repairman who might be dating, might be married, we don't know. But he's
or
like,
just doesn't like to fuck on the job because, hey, lady, I'm just here to fix your phones, not get laid. This isn't porno.
I'm screwing the wires, not cleaning the pipes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It took me about 45 minutes into the movie where I started to get a little antsy. It's like, yes, you do have to go build up backstory for your characters, and you do have to give them context for what's going on, and you do have to establish the setting. So I have no issue with that. But about 45 minutes, I'm like, this really kind of needs to get to the point.
A lot of the best tension and acting and plot points are between Ben and whoever he's dealing with.
Sam,
why do I keep calling him Ben? Oh,
because
of Night
of the Living Dead.
Son of a bitch.
It would be nice if you'd get your story straight, man.
Yeah, that would be why. Because he is essentially the Ben from Night of the Living Dead. So Sam, you know, excuse-moi, this entire time, God damn it, is really great in whatever scene he's in with these other characters, because he's kind of the audience sort of participation character. This kid is full of, you know, that this is wondrous, this is scary, this is really tasty and grateful. And so you got to follow him as he's going around this place observing these things, and kind of ends up in the end being the Avenger that comes in and cleans house.
So what you're saying essentially is that you really kind of have to pay attention to the through line of the story to catch what's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is a through line, but it's mostly through Ben and Mrs. Willingham. Because Ben carries a lot of the emotional weight, and Mrs. Willingham is, as I said before, the Greek chorus, who comes in every, 20 minutes or so and says something really important.
You're all doomed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she, even without her tongue, she's trying to impart something really meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the characters who can't talk or see or hear have the most to say.
So, what did the movie get right?
The tension and a lot of some of the characterization and the through line with Sam.
It was interesting that you mentioned tension to this movie, because as far as a horror movie goes, it's not very horrific. It doesn't really scare you. It doesn't really hit you on a visceral level. I did think that it was interesting and compelling and very disturbing, but not scary.
However, in terms of psychological tone, you know, the madness level of it, just it starts slow and it just kind of builds up as it goes along, and you know, finally, you know, at about the point where Beals is taken into the lobotomy room, you know, the curve of the madness has gone really sharply up.
I gotta give props to whoever was the director of photography on this movie, because the way that the movie was shot really, really emphasizes the crazy. You get bits like the end where they're wailing on Dr. Masters, and it's shot with this really short lens, so it really distorts their features and kind of gives an almost fisheye, but not quite, look. Mm, and yeah. So it's really shot close up, and just the insanity fills the frame. Just their foaming at the mouth lips, and they're just wild bug eyes.
I thought at the beginning, some of the shots where they just set the camera rolling and let everybody kind of like almost do it like a stage play, I found it kind of jarring at first, because I was thinking this was going to be a higher budget movie. But then again, this is one of those types of movies that does not have a higher budget.
And that might be kind of one of the things I didn't like. That, okay, when I say I didn't like the setting, I think a sanitarium is a great place to have a horror movie. I didn't like the actual physical set. It didn't look like a sanitarium. It looked like it was just an empty house that they got some furniture from Family Village and put it in there.
Given the philosophy of Dr. Stevens, the classic sanitarium wouldn't have worked with his particular model of treatment.
Would have been too clinical.
Yeah,
basically.
I think that was probably a deliberate thing.
Oh, okay, I can see that as a fair point. And it does cover the fact that they didn't have a budget to dress the set with this movie at all.
I didn't like the various weird little twists and the red herring aspects, the fact that it was sort of confusing and hard to follow.
So you would have preferred a more traditional linear narrative, A to B to C, instead of this kind of vignette thing?
I can see why they did it the way they did it, but it's hard to figure out. It would have been a little better had it been a little bit, even just a little bit more traditional.
So what'd you think of the soundtrack?
I mean, clearly it was on-set sound a lot of the time. You could hear the hollowness, the interior echoey, you know, sounds when people walk around.
That was one of the aspects I didn't like about it, the poor sound quality.
Even the echoey, no ADR of the soundtrack, of the dialogue, I think actually works. It just kind of gives you this off-kilter, this kind of doesn't feel right, edge to it.
One thing I noticed that I liked was there were several moments, and this is a pretty subtle thing, where somebody would be walking along and there'd be a floorboard that they'd step on that would creak, or a door would creak when they opened it, or things of that nature. So you kind of have this impression of this being an old house. I mean, not just the look of it, but the sound of it.
As far as the look goes, it looks like a very shabby. It doesn't look like you're full-on bedlam, but it doesn't look like a place where you get healthy in your brain.
They did do a good job with the lighting. I mean, when they needed to be scary, they just turned the lights off.
Yeah.
And that worked really well, even with the spare lighting, like when Sam takes Nurse Beals upstairs. And, you know, one thing, when the nympho is talking to, I believe it was... It wasn't Danny. She's talking to one of the other characters, and they're in this doorway. And the lighting just reminded me of a much more expensive picture. And it may have been ambient light. They may have been just spare with it. But if they'd snapped a photo of this and put it in a magazine, I would have assumed it had been like some big budget picture.
There was that scene where she was talking to Crazy Ralph, and she's coming down from just taking a shower, and she's got like her hair up and like in a robe, and like she stops in like the half light, half shadow on her face.
Oh, that was good.
And they
lighting.
Had some really good lighting outside where Beals and Danny are just in the field with those flowers. It's very, you know, verdant. It's very nature. It's very natural.
Of Brownrigg, the director, of his three or four movies that he did, like Scum of the Earth and like Poor White Trash and basically shitty, low-budget exploitation movies, not too dissimilar to this. And they all kind of have this weird, quirky, but yet still well done with the lighting and the shadows and the creaking and the sound and even with the shitty ADR. So there is some talent behind this to a point.
In terms of technical quality, I mean, it varies, but I was satisfied with it. It does its job.
So you got anything else left you need to say about Don't Go in the Basement Near the Woods at the Edge of the Park or whatever the fuck this movie's called?
Ugh. I think I pretty much said it all right there.
Yeah, I'm done.
All right. There we go. That's Don't Go Near the Park of the Edge of the House on the Woods.
With the great popsicle.
With a great popsicle. So was Don't Look in the Basement appropriate to leave off the list?
I think what propelled this onto the list was two murders. One was the quiet, you know, quiet to psycho, you know, woman with the knife and, you know, got the pin, the paper spike in the eye. Mm-hmm. But that's even relatively mild because there's no blood in it. And it's shown fleetingly. Even the throat cut repairman, the phone telephone repairman, I mean, that's something that you'd run
it's
on
pretty
TV.
Pretty bloodless, yeah.
The thing that would get it on the list is the final murder. It's not the actual act itself, it's the escalating screams. The insanity, the screams, and the intensity of it, which implies something even more vile than what's going on.
And it's not just screaming from the victim, it's screaming from all the killers.
And it goes
on
for well over a minute, inside and out of the house.
I think that the only possible reason this might land on the censor's attention radar is the long drawn out murder of the lady doctor, because it's just pretty brutal and intense.
I'm going to go with the simplest reason is the probable reason, and it was lumped on the list because of the don't. That's it.
You're probably right. It probably is the don't title.
Yeah, it would be, I think it would be the title only, because even balanced against other movies of the type released back then, even in 70s, by 70s standards, up until The Final Murder, that movie would have never gotten an R.
Otherwise, off the list, off the list.
Yeah.
Off the list.
Off the list.
It's not very bloody. It's not very gory. It's got a hell of a climax, but that's hardly ban-worthy. What'd you think of Don't Look in the Basement?
I liked it. It took me about 5 minutes to get into it, but once I got into it, I was there for the ride.
Did you like it?
Mostly. It was damned confusing at times.
For me, it was weird and atmospheric and strange and strangely compelling. I wouldn't say that it was a good story, because more a series of crazy vignettes that are linked together.
It doesn't have a plot. It's basically just an excuse for weird shit to happen with character types. But it is a potent character study because of the way the people are locked down and get
all the characters are great. That's one thing that was so compelling about it.
Yeah. So it's colorful enough that it lands just on the inside of thumbs up for me. Catch me in a different day on a different mood and I'll give it the meh. So at the end of the day, we're all kind of tepidly, it was okay, right?
Pretty much. Yeah, I'm above meh. I'm a little below really liked it. I liked it. I mean, it's a movie I could watch once or twice again.
I think we're all on the same level here.
Yeah, I mean, well, I might like it more than you two, just slightly.
So we're all thumbs up, but we're not necessarily super enthusiastically thumbs up.
Not super enthused, no.
So,
If it had been worked on a little better, it would be definitely a happy thumbs up, because the characters in the set were so compellingly done. It's just the writing and the plot needed help big time.
Yeah.
All right, so there you go.
Yep.
We liked it-ish.
Yeah, mm-hmm. a reasonably likable film.
All right, a reasonably likable film. Alrighty, we're all done. Not looking in the basement anymore. And the good news is, we're all done with the don'ts. No more don'ts at all. Next week is The Dorm That Dripped Blood, a.k.a. Pranks, which is a much more generic title than The Dorm That Dripped Blood. Hey, right now, while you're not doing something, not going into the park, not going into the woods, don't drop us an email. We'd love to not hear from you. The email address is thevideonastyproject@gmail.com, and we'll catch you next week. Until then, stay evil.
There's nothing there. You're crazy!